Paul should let them do what they want. I understand that's like a basic ego thing, right? We all have that in us, right? We want things to go our way. Okay, so this person just telling you that, right? Yeah, so, I mean, it's not pleasant. I mean, having somebody angry at you is not one of the more pleasant experiences in life. I understand that. But, you know, we want to be understanding. And, you know, very much the fundamental understanding is they're suffering. You know, right now they are suffering, right? They're learning something in life that nobody likes to learn, especially young people, which is what? The world will not always meet my needs. Right? That's a very tough one, right? I mean, as I say, even for adults, the world will not always meet my needs. I can't always get my way, right? Things don't always turn out the way I want them to turn out. I mean, this is what, you know, I mean, many adults still struggle with this. Is that true? Yeah, so you're just seeing it in a young person. So, you know, when you can, help them. But if you get angry back, if you kind of rise to that level of intensity, you know, what are we doing? You know, are we helping the situation at all? No. So I think that's important, you know. Again, it's not like we're wimps. It's not like we're scared. It's not like, you know, it's none of that kind of unhealthy stuff. You know, it's not like we're codependent. It's not like we're all those things. It's like, yeah, it's like, I understand what's going on here. You're angry. Yeah, I mean, when my kids were teenagers, you know, many years ago, you know, I used to have to set limits on them and tell them they had to come home or they couldn't do this. Were they happy? No. Were they angry? Yes. And I would say, that's fine. You can be angry. You still can't go. That's fine. You know, if you want to be angry, you can be angry with me. And that's part of being a parent, right? It's like part of the job. It's like that. Thank you. So any other questions? Yes. Yes.
What you were just describing sounded a lot like compassion to me. Mm-hmm. Could you expand on that, please?
A little bit. Again, I want to give a talk today. So, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, the basis of Buddhism is understanding and compassion, right? So that's what we're talking about. You know, understanding is you understand who they are, you understand where they're coming from, you understand. That's wisdom. You know, we're not just reactive. And the compassion, Pete, is, you know, they're suffering. Yeah. And who do they blame for their suffering? You. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's okay. Right? I mean, you know, it's not easy to come out of the world of blame and to enter the world of responsibility. I mean, that's a big one for all of us, right? To stop blaming, you know, the world, our parents, our childhood, or this for our condition, right? You know, whatever has happened, whatever is happening, is because of causes and conditions. That is just simply the truth. But what's arising in my mind stream in response to all that is arising within me, nowhere else. And so to take responsibility for my own mind, for my own emotions, for my own actions of my body and my speech, is very much what it means to be, you know, a mature human being, right? But it's not easy. And on the way there, there is this need to blame, to hold somebody else or something else responsible for my mind state. Right? And that's, you know, not only is that fundamentally wrong, but it's disempowering. There's no power in that. You know, that's like the ultimate victim. You know, I can only be the way I am because of this, this, and this, and this. That's not true. This, and this might have conditioned us to be a certain way, but when we become aware of what's coming up within us, and aware that we have, you know, we can hold it in mindfulness, we can be aware, we can see what it is, and we can respond differently, you know, there's our freedom to change. But as long as we're caught in blame, and as long as we're caught in being the victim of life and situations, you know, we will continue to suffer. Right? I mean, is that clear? I mean, it's simple to say. I understand that. It's why we practice. But, you know, our spiritual life should empower us. Right? Should make us able and capable and competent in dealing with life in a healthy way, in a mature way, in a way that produces happiness for ourselves and others. You know, so it's important that we, you know, do this big shift. It's a very fundamental shift for many of us, that we finally take responsibility for who we are and how we show up in the world, right? You know, we could have had terrible parents, we could have had all rotten breaks, we could have had this, this, and this, right? That could all be true, you know, I mean, that could have happened. But the truth is, in this moment, we are here. Right? That is the only truth. In this moment, I am here. And in this moment of being here, how do I want to be? See, that's what we were doing earlier. Remember we were doing meditation? See, that's what we're beginning to learn, how just to be here. You see, like to come back to kind of a base level. I'm just being here. I'm just here. I'm present. I'm aware. I'm clear. Right? You see, if we don't have that, if we're all lost in our dramas, lost in our identities, lost in our thoughts, it's very hard to show up in life with any kind of clarity. Right? But when we learn how to establish that ground of clarity and stability in our mind, then we realize, even when somebody's yelling at us, right? We're, you know, we see what's going on. We don't get lost in reactivity. We don't get lost in emotionality. We say, yeah, they're just pissed. They're pissed because I'm not letting them do what they want, right? And they're unhappy, and they hold me responsible for their unhappiness. I get it. How can I get it? Because I'm clear. You see what I'm saying? But if I get angry back, if I get reactive, then, you know, just lost. Right? We become victims of each other. This is big. It's like a fundamental shift. But again, as I said, it's very empowering. No matter what's happened to me, no matter what's going on in the world, in this moment, I have a choice to how I show up. That's your freedom. Right? That's freedom. If you don't think you have a choice, then you're not free, are we? Anyhow. Any other questions about the practice? Good. So for those who've been around a while, I want to continue teaching something that I've been teaching on and off for the last year and actually for decades, which is this text that was preserved, or this practice was preserved in the Tibetan tradition and actually came from India to Tibet centuries ago, called the mind trainings. And these very simple but profound slogans, just little sayings, there are 57 or 58 of them, that really kind of guide us in really living an enlightened life. And over these months and everything, and there are talks on them and books on them, they're called Lojong, L-O-J-O-N-G, in Tibetan, they're called the mind trainings. So this is the next section. This is the, So in each of this, there are sections, and then there underneath them are these stanzas. So this section is called The Extent of Proficiency in Mind Training. So this is very important. One of the things we're learning is to stop endlessly judging ourselves, criticizing ourselves, endlessly assessing and evaluating ourselves, this kind of endless tying ourselves up in knots, right? Learning to be more open, more accepting of things as they are. So, and yet, he's saying here, we need to assess our proficiency in the mind training. So there's some need, it's like over here is this endless kind of neurotic judging and self-criticism and self-assessing that's always going on. How am I doing? How am I doing? How am I doing? How am I doing? People liking me, people doing, am I doing a good job? Every meditation, how am I doing? Good meditator, bad meditator. So this stuff we got to get rid of. Okay, and just work the practice. But at the same time, over the course of time, we have to judge, like, is this stuff working? You know what I mean? Or else, I remember when I was a therapist and I'd meet people who've been in therapy for years. And I'd say to them, what are you working on? It's like years. What are you working on? And they'd basically tell me they're still working on the same issues they were working on years ago. And my response would be, there's something wrong here. If you're going somewhere to get rid of a certain suffering in your mind, there has to be a sense that somehow you're going to get, it's going to happen. It's like being on medication. If you're taking medication, but there's a problem, and the medication should what? Remediate it. If it's 3 years later and you're still in the medication, you still have the same problem, right? You see, there has to be some ability to assess whether whatever we're doing is working, right? Whether there is proficiency. So this is what this section is. It's saying, it's up to now, it's been all about the mind trainings, but now it's saying, how can we assess whether I'm really becoming proficient? Is there any criteria, right? So, the first thing is, and these again are little, for those who aren't used to it, these are little short sayings which aren't often clear, and then there's some little explanation. So, the saying is, all Dharma has a single purpose. Now, Dharma has a very specific kind of meaning within the context of Buddhism, but let's, for today, since many of you may not be Buddhist or practice different paths or whatever. Let's say that all spiritual life has a single purpose. Okay? So we'll just say that. So in the commentary, he says, since the purpose of all Dharma is simply to tame ego clinging, as you practice Dharma or work on the mind training, ego clinging should decrease. If your efforts in Dharma do not counteract ego clinging, your practice is meaningless. Since this is the one criteria that determines whether Dharma practice is effective or not, it is said to be the yardstick by which a Dharma person is measured. Wow. You know, I thought I was being a good spiritual person because I joined the Florida Community of Mindfulness. You know, doesn't that count? You know, I thought I was getting, you know, spiritual points by, you know, meditating every day and practicing mindfulness. Doesn't that count? You know, I'm reading spiritual books and I'm having conversations about weightier matters that I used to never have, you know. Doesn't that make me mean I'm becoming more proficient? And you see what I'm saying? We could, you know, or you see, you know, or like these days, you know, I'm a spiritual person. What does that mean? Well, I do yoga or I do Tai Chi, right? I'm not saying that these things aren't good for you, but our criteria, right? And I could go on and on and on of all the things that we do, all the activities that we participate in, that we think define us as somebody who's becoming, let's say, more spiritual. I mean, is that clear what I'm saying? I mean, and we all think that way, right? And yet he's very interested, he's saying, the one criteria is not about that. He's really saying it's really about the kind of person you are. Right? It's the kind of person you're becoming. You see, we are a nation of doers, right? And so we often define ourselves by what we do, by our activity, by our interests, right? But again, one can be doing all these things, and yet they could be just for my own self-aggrandizement. Now, I used to be a worldly person. Now I'm a spiritual person. Pretty hot stuff. Right? I used to get angry, but now I don't, you know. Much calmer these days. Pretty hot stuff here. So, okay, not saying that all this isn't good. Okay? Is that clear? I'm not saying that that's not good, but it's going, how do I really assess my development? Again, he says, tame ego clinging. Ego clinging means egocentricity, self-centeredness, narcissism. You know, there are many variations on that. Now you might say, well, what's wrong with that? Right? What's wrong with, you know, looking out for number one? Because, according to Buddhist psychology, looking out for number one is fundamentally the cause of our suffering. Now, that doesn't mean, for those who go to extremes, that you don't take care of number one. You see, it's not that extreme. But it means if all we think about, all we care about is me, my needs, my wants, my desires, right? We are encased in a very tiny little self-absorbed bubble. And the problem with that is it doesn't feel good. That's the problem with it. Because we feel disconnected from others. We often feel alone or lonely. We feel separate from. Even in our closest relationships, we may not feel deep connection. So it's there's fundamentally a problem with that, living that way. This endless focus on me, me, me. So he's saying, whatever practice we're doing it so we can become, we might say, more selfless people, less selfish people, less self-absorbed people, less narcissistic people. When all the energy is going here, right? When all the focus is on getting my needs met, keeping me safe, getting me ahead, getting me this, getting me that. See, all the energy is here. And it's kind of like gets knotted up. But when we no longer are doing that, we have now lots of energy to connect, to be a part of, and to realize, right, that there's a whole world of other beings, of animals, of plants, that also have their needs and wants, too. And that by thinking about their needs and wants, as along with my own, I now feel a part of things. I feel connected to things. I feel more open, more spacious, less alone. Right? So this breaking out of this self-absorption, this bubble of self, this prison of self, is what he's talking about here. And again, it is something in our culture, our American culture, is not talked about. If anything, the opposite of is talked about. You know, our culture, you know, our parents, well-meaning, often raised us with what? Your job in life is to what? Well, take care of yourself, get ahead. Right? Yeah. And many people do that. Actually, most of us do that. And most of us work very hard at that, don't we? Right? And many of us may, to one degree or another, achieve some of those markers along the way. And yet, there's a price, isn't there? We are not happy. We are not joyful. We are not open-hearted. Right? And we feel disconnected. It's a feeling. Does everybody know what I'm talking about? Yeah. And even if we're good people, I'm not saying, you know, like you're, you know, just kind of narcissistic, you know who I'm talking about. not happy. Not happy. Suffering. And yet don't realize that it's their own endless self-absorption that is the fundamental cause of their unhappiness, of their anger, of their resentment, of their greed, of their insensitivity to the needs of others. You know, they don't find it because caught in the trance of self. So again, is it good that we learn to meditate? Yes. Is it good we learn mindfulness? Yes. Is it good we learn Buddhist psychology and how the mind operates? And are we good to learn all these things? Yes. Because they help facilitate what he's talking about here, which is we enter the world and we become we're the same person, but our orientation is totally different. And it's an orientation that will produce happiness, right? When we meet the needs of others, when we are there for others, when we involve ourselves in altruistic activity, how do we feel? Good. It's a good feeling. But when we meet simply our own needs, no matter how we have to do it, whether we have to manipulate, whether we have to control, whether we have to, you know, there may be a sense of momentary satisfaction, right, when we meet it and we get what we want, and we get the other person to do what we want. But it's not a good kind of, it's not a lasting kind of happiness or well-being. Is that clear? It's not that in a certain way it may not feel good, right? For example, if you're in a competition and you win, how do you feel? Great. If you're in a competition and you lose, how do you feel? Bad. Right? You see, I mean that's it, right? So it's an endless, there's no satisfaction, because even when you win, and for a short period of time you bask in the victory of your win, right? Anybody ever win anything, right? How long does that winning last, that good feeling? What? How long? A minute, you know, but of course you can keep thinking about it over and over again, and you can keep telling everybody about it, and these days you can watch yourself on Facebook, you know. But, you know, so in our modern world, we can keep it going, can't we? But eventually it's going to peter out. Right? And it always has to be repeated. You always have to keep winning. You always have to keep gaining. You always have to keep getting. It's just endless. What if you're happy whoever wins? I'm happy for them. Let them, you know, happy they won. Yeah, I don't mind losing. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. I'm happy they're happy, you know. It's a different way. Buddhism, we call that taking joy in the joy of others. You know, let others win. You know, they got to the front of the line, right? You know. Where was I going the other day? You know, I go a lot on 275. And you know, there's like, you get off at the I-4 exit, or you get off at the downtown exit. You know what I'm saying? Right? And it's like, there's like, you know, a half mile beforehand. And what does the sign say? Get over to the right and get in the lane. You know what? They're always people. What do? What? The last minute, right? You just get in. All of a sudden, you know. You know, I was going over to St. Pete yesterday late afternoon, and the car had caught on fire on the bridge. So everything was all the way backed up from the Howard Franklin. Right? And everybody, you know, most people are just, you know, it's traffic's moving slowly. All of a sudden, you know, in the right lane, you know, on the service line, zoom. You know, somebody's just zooming along, right? You know what I mean? And who do you think they pull right in front of? You know what I mean? I mean, like, I've been stuck in traffic for 20 minutes, and all of a sudden, this son of a gun just kind of comes zooming along. So what's my instinct, you see? What's my instinct? Don't let him in. And yet, very quickly, I catch myself. Yeah, let him, you know, if it means so much for him, let him get in. You know, he's, poor guy, just stressed. You know, stressed by the world, anger, he's got to get in there first, doesn't want to wait for others, thinks he's somebody special. Just let him be, this is the world, right? You know, in Buddhism we say, give victory to others, yeah, I'll go away. Right? I mean, can you feel what a different response that is? You know what I mean? Right? You see, you know, get angry at this. Like children, people in this world, right? Got to be first online. You know, give victory to others. But if they're happy being first, let them be first. So any questions about this, you know, very important, I think very important, how do I judge whether all my spiritual activities, you know, that I'm really becoming proficient, you know? Usually we'd say, well, you know, I'm meditating more, my concentration is better, and I mean, those are certainly markers, you see? But this is saying, it's like, it's really talking about the fruit of the practice. You know, how do you judge a fruit? Yeah, and how do you know it's ripe? Taste, right? You know, just by looking at it, you can may not tell. But it's by the taste. You go, oh, this is ripe. So it's by the taste. So any questions about that, or anybody disagree? Yes. Yes. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And every now and again, I will go back in my mind towards that experience.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a wonderful
experience. Yeah.
Is that something that I have? No,
that's wonderful. Yeah, that's wonderful that you have that. This is not about that. This is not saying you can't enjoy life and have great experiences and be happy. I'm glad you clarified that. This is sort of just more generally in how you're showing up in the world. You know, how do you know that, you know, your involvement in Fodakini mindfulness and your practice and your meditation and the way you're doing, you know, how do I know that it's really bearing fruit? Well, it's in life. It's how you are with your partner, right? Are you more open? Are you more accepting? Are you less... Is it no longer all about Mauricio, you know, and you know, who's taking care of me or who's meeting, you know what I'm saying? Or are you more, that's what it's saying. You know, that because that the mast of ego is being lowered. And so you'll see it in your actions and your speech. You know, it's like speech. It's like, you know, when I'm totally in my ego, it's like, you know, I say whatever I want to say, right? Isn't that true? I got a right to say whatever I want to say. True or not true? Yeah. Isn't that what many people tell us? Yeah, be yourself. Say what you're going to say. Well, you know, the problem with that. What's the problem? Words have consequences. Words affect other people. You know, I mean, if I'm just only thinking about, you know, this is what I'm feeling, I got a right to tell anybody what I think of them. Right? There are even people who write books about that. Well, yeah, it's good to know what you feel and what you think, but you know, how things are said and when's the right time to say them, and sometimes it's better maybe not to say it. You know, there's got to be some wisdom here. So kind of aware, oh, my words have effects. They have effects on other people. It's that. Yeah, you can enjoy your skydiving. I don't want to take that away from you, Maurice. Any other questions about, yes, proficiency? Yes.
I was in high school the other day, and I had a student say they were going to jump off on me. Anyway, I came one morning, I followed through, but I found myself getting angry and anxiety. But I can't
jump off, you mean like physically or just verbally?
Oh. Both
ways. Oh.
Mm-hmm. As far as me feeling it, I felt this anxiety and anger building up, and I caught it. And I just sat there as I was waiting for the administration to come in. I just was breathing. She kept trying to argue with me.
Yeah.
I didn't participate. And I realized that she was the result of causes and conditions of her upbringing and parenting. And if I responded to that, just like, you know, make it go on. That how I responded to her was the best way I could show up and help her, even though, you know, she did what she did.
Right. Yeah, so that's just, let me just say it, right. So that's for the recording. Yeah, so the question, or really it was a sharing of an experience saying, yeah, I was in school working with a teenager or somebody. They were obviously upset with you or upset about something, angry, and they were threatening to you. If you didn't stop doing whatever you were doing, they were going to verbally, physically, you know, they were right being aggressive. And you're saying, you know, your first response was to get anxious or angry. You know, that's the emotional response. That's the ego-based response, because the experience is now about me, right? Now, again, I certainly believe in self-preservation, right? So I'm not, you know, denying common sense. So, you know, everything has to be assessed, right? But you said all of a sudden you realized what was arising within you, and all of a sudden you came out of that and noticed this young lady is suffering. And she's responding to whatever you're trying to do with her because of her causes and conditions, right? And it doesn't mean that you don't act, and you may have to act forcibly or something, but our mind state is different. See, this is the thing. Our mind state is different. We're not angry. You know, we understand, you know, that this is a suffering world. You know, and we'll certainly, you know, if we get out of our little, you know, many of us live in fairly comfortable, safe worlds, right? Which is fine. But if we get out of that, or life forces us out of that, and we begin to, you know, see what's the life like for lots of people. Yeah, it's sort of a different, it sort of raises the game a bit, right? And to me, you know, if we live in those kind of environments, if we work in those kinds of environments, you know, we need to raise our game, right? Because, you know, our buttons will be pushed. Much more, you know, much more continually. And either that can become just a source of increasing our own affliction and really responding in a way that really is not helpful to that child, or else we can see what's going on and at least try alternative ways. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And I was able to look at it later. That was a big difference for me. So, and assessing if it's working, I was like, maybe there is something to this.
Yeah, maybe there is. So, yeah, so it's important. Yeah, and often, you know, in terms of, you know, when we talk about proficiency, competence, yeah, I mean, it's often those historical situations, you know, with people like family or colleagues or other situations, or, you know, people cutting in on you, you know, where you see in the past I would have responded very differently. And now my response is not so ego-based. It's not so self-based. I'm sort of aware of who they are and that they're suffering, or they have needs, or they're just a product of their causes and conditions, and they really can't help themselves. They don't have the skills or ability to respond any differently than they are. And again, it doesn't mean we don't deal with these people, but we don't deal with them again with disappointment or anger or frustration. We understand they are. This is just the way of the world, right? So let me, I just want to do one more, because there's a family program today and they're going to come in here at 15:15. Okay. So this is also a good one. It says, of the two judges, rely on the principal one. Now again, that's why there needs to be explanation, because we have no idea what he's talking about, do we? So I won't read the commentary, but basically what they're getting at is, this is really, again, this is about our proficiency and our spiritual path. So there are basically two judges. There's everyone else, and there's me, right? And this is a little tricky, because basically the point that's really emphasized here of the two judges relying on the principal one is meaning you. You know, in other words, this is saying, you know, you might look good to others, right? But you know, if you're honest with yourself, you know where you're at, okay? So of the two judges means don't rely on how other people see you, right? Because you just may be a very good actor, right? Or they may be very deluded. You know, I mean, it could be, you know, or a combination there. So, you know, ultimately, you know, you have your own standards, right, of how you want to be in life and how you want to show up in life and how you want your mind to be and how you want your speech to be and how you want your actions of body. And that should be impeccable for you, right? Do you see what I'm saying? But of course, you know, there's a problem with this, right? Okay, so even though it sounds the way it's set up, it sounds, you know, pretty good, right? Yeah, I get it, you know. Ultimately, I need to be the judge of what's really going on with me, and I can't always be, just because other people praise me to the sky, you know, I should never be fooled by that. Just could be building up my ego. So that's the fundamental teaching. The problem that I see with that is what? See, we could be deluding ourselves. See, what if I don't see myself really clearly? See, I think I do, but what if I don't? So in a certain sense, for probably most of us, we do need some feedback. Okay? You know what I'm saying? We do need somebody calling us on our stuff or... but we can't be reliant on that, right? So again, it's. I think the fundamental principle is true. We want to get to a point in our own development where we are sort of like what I was saying earlier, where we are totally self-responsible. You know, we are clear how we want to show up in the world. We're clear about the values and standards we want to live by and conduct ourselves in, and we are the one who is assessing how we're doing. You know, I mean, ultimately, because we're the one who knows. See, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you all see me, right? Everybody see me? But you can't see my mind, can you? See, that's the problem. You see, and I can see all of you, but I can't see your mind, right? Now, I can kind of get maybe an indication of how your mind is by, your behavior and the things you say, right? But how do I know you're not a good actor? You see what I'm saying? I don't really know that, do I? You see, and you don't know whether I am. Just want to point that out. Right? So ultimately, you know, I need to be totally in charge of how I show up in the world and how I present myself and the integrity, right? Right? I need to see when I'm on and when I'm off. Right? That's my responsibility. I need ultimately to be the one who assesses me. Okay? But at the same time, you know, we have to rely on others because sometimes we are deluded about our own behavior, our own actions, right? Right? And that's why it's so important that, you know, we, all of us, be helpful to each other, right? You know, when you read about these, well, I mean, we won't go political, but we'll go religious, you know, all of a sudden these religious leaders who get all of a sudden come out that they're involved in all these sexual shenanigans and all this deceit, you know what I mean? It's like, what's going on there? Right? Well, obviously, you know, there were two things going on. One thing ultimately was, you know, they were just good actors, and either they were deceitful or else they just didn't know themselves, were in denial, right? But also, there's often, as we see, the people around them didn't hold them accountable when they were doing what they were doing. They make excuses. They rationalize. Right? So I think it's very important, especially in a community, that we help each other. Right? You know, if we've made a commitment to show up in a certain way and act a certain way, well, we should support each other in doing that. But when you see the teacher or somebody else acting or behaving in ways that are not congruent than what we're espousing, what we're teaching, then in a kind way, we should help each other. Because we may not see it. It's often very hard to see ourselves. Why is it so hard to see ourselves? Because we're so identifying with ourselves. You know, to get out, it's like I often say to people, you know, and I'll say it to all of you, does anybody here know exactly right now how your face looks? What? Think about it. Can anybody honestly say, I know exactly how my face looks right now? Why not? Well, because you can't see yourself, can you? You see, you can't see yourself. It's impossible, right? You know, I mean, you could think you look wonderful. You could think all kinds of things, but you have no idea, right? There's only one way, well, two ways, you know, that you could find out how you look right now. The main way is what? Look in a mirror. So now you have some objective, right? Feedback. Oh, this is how I look right now. Or you could ask somebody, you know, did I comb my hair this morning? You know what I mean? You see? So we understand that if we want to groom ourselves, we need a mirror, don't we? So we can see how we look. But what's the mechanism that we can see ourself, our thoughts, our feelings, our behavior? What's our mirror? See, what's our objective mirror that allows us to have not only self-awareness, but self-awareness with criteria, right? Because when you look in the mirror and you go, gee, I got to comb my hair, it's because you know how you want your hair to look. I'm just making this up, okay? Is that clear? Right? You know how you want to look. So when you look in the mirror and you see how you look, you know whether you're on target or, you know, something's got to be changed, right? But do we have that same self-awareness and objectivity about our own behavior, our own speech, and our own thoughts, our own mind states? I mean, that's one of the skills that are so important that we're developing in the practice of mindfulness and meditation. One of the reasons we are learning to calm our minds, to clarify our minds, right? It's so now we can use the instrument of our mind to see ourselves clearly, right? Most of us can't see ourselves clearly because there's just too much going on. You know, it's just endless activity in there. So the capacity of really objectively perceiving what's going on, either in the external world or the internal world, is very difficult. So this calming down, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh uses the example. He says, you know, if you've walked into a lake and you want to see the bottom, or you walk into the ocean, you know, the Gulf or something, you want to see the bottom, you don't keep walking around, because when you walk around, you're just stirring up the sediment. You know, if you want to see to the bottom, you have to what? Stop. Right? And if you're patient, the sediment will settle that you've been stirring up as you walk around, and then you can see the bottom, you can see what's there. Right? So we want to be able to look into our minds to see what's there so we can, you know, work with whatever is going on. But if our minds are just all stirred up, emotionality, thoughts, dramas, you know, endlessly, it's very hard to see clearly what's really going on. I mean, have you noticed that? Why do you think that is? So, you know, meditation is, and mindfulness, calming, to me is a very essential kind of just general human skill. Again, that we were never taught. It's not like there's anything wrong with us. We were just never taught it. We were just taught what? Well, get ahead, or else just endlessly, we went to school and all they gave us was what? Information. Facts, information, theories, to just put in our mind. But nobody ever told us how to use our mind, how to use our mind correctly, how to have a healthy mind. I mean, did anybody ever, did you ever have a course in that? They didn't, can you see it? And they even had courses in hygiene. I don't know if they still do, right? I mean, like teaching you how to clean your body and stuff, you know, right? They teach you those kinds of skills, right? I mean, when I was young, the guys took shop and the girls took, what did they take? Home ec, you know what I mean? It's like, it was all, you know, learn these skills, but never learn about, you know, who you are and about the mind that's learning these skills. You know, like we learned how to clean our bodies, but no one ever taught us how to clean our minds. So that is why decades later, they're a little dirty. I mean, it's really very simple. Any questions about what's been shared? Yeah. Uh-huh.
How can we judge our progress without getting attached to results, to progress?
Say that again.
How do we judge our progress without getting attached to the results, to progress?
Well, so I think, so the question is, how do we assess our proficiency or progress in the path, but not get attached to it so that prevents our future progression? Well, I think the person already answered it. You don't get attached. Right? I mean, this is like a fundamental thing, not to attach. It's an assessment of where we are now. It's an ability to take a look at ourselves and be honest about our transformation or whatever. And that's all it is. It's just like troubleshooting. It's assessing and troubleshooting. But, you know, but after that, we just continue on. I mean, you know, we don't get stuck. We don't reify experience. We don't hold on, repeating. You know, it's like, you know, do a good assessment, do a self-evaluation, and just move on. Right? I mean, we don't. Attachment is grabbing. When you grab, you get stuck in whatever it is. Right? So it's a fundamental. This is another, you know, Dharma talk. But, you know, in Buddhism, attachment is attachment aversion are, again, things that just, destroy our happiness in life.